This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ho, 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 hello, and welcome to another episode of Bah Humbug, the Christmas movies podcast that managed to get a whole 25% of our Christmas decorations onto the tree this year. Only wait one thing for it. Next year, we raise the ceiling and get more trees. Okay, so today we are going to be talking about a whole mess of movies, and arguably mess is the operative word, that discuss royal Christmases. Yes, we were inspired by the fact that the Princess Switch 3, Romancing the Star, is out this year, with Vanessa Hudgens returning in three different roles. She plays Chicago baker Stacy, whom, of course, as we all remember, married Prince Edward of Belgravia. But she's also Margaret, who is now Queen of Montenegro, who married Stacy's best friend. And she plays Margaret's ne'er-do-well cousin, Duchess Fiona, who gets the chance to redeem herself this time after plotting to take the throne in the last film, after a priceless relic loaned by the Vatican goes missing, and only Fiona can get it back. Now, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that these films are completely frickin' barmy, but if you want a Christmas-themed heist movie with Vanessa Hudgens starring in three different roles, this is really as good as it gets. That said, we discussed The Princess Switch 2 last year, and to avoid repeating myself too much, or more than I already do, I've widened out the discussion this time to the entire Netflix Princes universe, which is what I'm calling it because there are links between all these films. So we're going to be including not just the Princess Switch movies, but the three Christmas Prince films as well, and the previously on Netflix A Royal Christmas, which starred Stephen Hagen and Lacey Chabert. That's because Stephen Hagen is actually going to join us a little bit later in the show to discuss his experiences making that movie and talking about these movies in general. But first, I'm delighted to be talking about the whole giant, weird phenomenon of these films, with two film journalist friends and princess movie experts, Clarice Lockery and Charlotte Harrison. So here's my chat with Clarice and Charlotte. Enjoy. Okay, well, let's talk about the Netflix Princes universe. That's what I'm calling this. But we're talking about particularly, obviously, The Princess Switch 3. And we're going to kind of cover some of these other royal movies as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Christmas Prince movies. Sadly, no fourth Christmas Prince movie this year. I'm sure we were all devastated by that. And we're going to have an interview later in the show with one of the stars of A Royal Christmas, which came out a few years ago and kind of is one of the leaders of this trend because they're all exactly the same movie, just done over and over again. But what are your relationships, Clarice and Charlotte, with these kind of crazy royal Christmas movies?
It's the kind of movie that's playing before you already know it. You know, like I don't think I ever actively sit down to watch a princess royal Christmas movie. They just happen to me and I accept it. And I enjoy them because they're very silly.
They are very silly, that's for sure. How about you, Charlotte? Have you ever watched one of these deliberately? Because I have, I'll be honest. I mean, mostly for work, but nevertheless, I have actively chosen to put one on.
Recently, yeah, my mum has always been a big Hallmark movie fan. Like, come November, she's got the film, like, on Channel 5. There's a Christmas movie channel, isn't there, on Sky? There is, I was such an arsehole about them for years. I was so like, these are not cinema. Why are you watching these? And I was, yeah.
All right, Martin Scorsese.
I don't know. But lately, and particularly I'd say the past 18 months, I can really see why they're so appealing. The kind of comfort and escapism within them. Like Clarice said, they happen to you. And like you said, they are the same movie every time. And yet that's like, that's nice. I spent every day waking up not knowing what is going to happen with the universe, but I can put on one of these films. I know exactly what's going to happen for the next, hopefully, 90 minutes.
Yeah, I feel like they really struggle when they go over 90 minutes. I think there's a natural cutoff point somewhere there.
Yeah, exactly. They do outstay their welcome at that point.
I think so. So, I mean, okay, let's get a bit of context here. What are your views on royalty in general? Is it a good thing, a bad thing, a I don't care thing?
I like my royalty to be fun. I'm a bigger fan of, this is no good way to put this. I'm a bigger fan of the dead ones, you know, like a Prince Regent, a George III. Mm-hmm. When at a time period when they were doing very weird things. Because I live in Brighton, I get to walk past the ridiculous pavilion that the Prince Regent built every day. And I enjoyed that. And I think if modern royalty were doing more dragon adjacent things, I would prefer it.
I think we all would, yeah. Are you talking slaying dragons or just like, you know, having...
Oh, sorry, that was a very niche reference. Within the Brighton Pavilion, there's a lot of dragon decoration for some reason. I think he was going through a dragon phase when he built the Brighton Pavilion.
Because he was obsessed with dragons and India, I believe, at the time when he built it. Wasn't it like his palace for his mistress?
Oh, I don't actually know the history of it. That's really bad.
It probably. I mean, look, they all built palaces for their mistresses. So Trianon at Versailles, for example, that was Louis XV's mistress's house.
That'd be a Christmas movie I'd watch.
Mistress's palace.
The mistress's... look, Netflix, call us. We've got your next $1 billion idea. We can get at least 3 movies out of this. It's not going to be a problem. Charlotte, how about you? Are you pro-royals?
Again, like Clarice, I'd say the Horrible Histories version of royalty I'm here for. If there's a song about it, even better. Not so much now, but this version, yes. And like the Princess Diaries version, when you wanted to wake up and find you were royalty, it sounded kind of fun. At least 15 years ago before Pizza Express and those kind of things.
That's a niche reference as well. I would just suggest people, baffled by that, Google Prince Andrew and Pizza Express in close proximity. Yeah, I'm kind of similar. I like reading all the stories about it. I can recommend a lot of Jean Plaidy books, which were very formative to my development of any understanding of English history. But the real life ones are a bit boring or appalling. Like it seems like there's two settings and it's basically one of those. And the Queen has, to her credit, always gone for boring, but some of her children less so. So, you know.
I will say, I think it's the King of Norway who just has a nice dog and he brings the dog places and he'll wear silly hats like that. I can silly hats.
That's
and
the kind
dogs.
Of world it, yeah.
I'm good.
That's using your power for good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no impulse to depose him. He's good.
He can say. I will say the President of Ireland also has two enormous big shaggy black dogs who come to everything. So, you know, presidents can do that too. Biden has two good dogs. Basically, good dogs, maybe, instead of a royal family. How about that?
I prefer that. And then the Christmas movie should be about the dog switching.
Oh, my God. Netflix, we are on fire right now. Call
would
us.
Animated
we've got so many
live action.
Oh, live action.
Live action, animation, whichever. Yeah.
Because I want the little dog, you know, when they have to do the tricks and then they animate the lips to move. I like that.
Like the Lion King.
Yes.
God. Oh God. Okay, Netflix, don't call us that. That's a terrible idea. I do think it is weird how much some of these films are shaped by real life. This is why I ask about the royals, because, you know, it seems to me that Ben Lamb in The Princess Switch is very much doing a performance at least inspired by, if not an impression of, some of the British royal family. Like, there's a very kind of Prince Charles energy to him in those films, I feel like.
Yeah, and it feels like Margaret is Grace Kelly, right?
Right, yeah.
I feel like that's what they're aiming for, hence the Montenero made up micro kingdom. To me, it's always felt like it's a mixture between British royalty and one of those European micro kingdom royalties where they still sort of speak with a British accent for some reason.
I do have so many questions about the geography of this entire genre. So we've got, it's Montenero and Belgravia in the Princess Switch movies. Those are the two kingdoms involved. Cordinia is the one in A Royal Christmas and Aldovia is the one in A Christmas Prince. It's really hard for me to keep track of even the names of these films, are so generic. But this is obviously an alt history version of quasi-Europe where English-speaking countries have broken up into loads of micro-states. Because a lot of these films, at least the Princess Switch and Christmas Prince ones, exist in the same universe. They have characters who cross over hilariously and they cross over with a castle for Christmas, which exists in a recognisable UK. So my question is, where are they and why and what's going on and how come they all speak English? Like the people in the quaint little town down below as well, not just the people in the castle. The castles, by the way, are all extremely Eastern European looking. The people are all very Western European looking. It's very confusing. I don't understand what's going on.
And it was film two that really threw me when she says that I'll meet you in London when I fly via Chicago. And I was doing the little map planner, sky scanner, whatever in my head, no.
So you're in, so maybe they're all in Canada? I mean, some of them look like they were filmed in Canada. So is that, would that make sense? I don't know what's happening.
Or is it just cheaper to do it? Sometimes it's cheaper to go. And she was feeling very, she just wanted to save some money for Christmas.
She just slept on the bench in Heathrow.
Don't know.
Got the 5 a.m. flight from, okay, that makes sense.
Went to Spoons for the pint beforehand.
So what is convincing to you about these films? Is anything remotely based in truth?
No.
It's 0.1%.
I will say the set dressing. I feel they are potentially often taking advantage of pre-existing interiors of these gorgeous Eastern European castles. So sometimes I will catch myself going, oh, that's a nice painting. Wonder.
Okay.
The paintings look like they might be real. That's, I'll offer that.
They belong in a castle of some sort.
Yes. It's not a Photoshop of Vanessa Hudgens. Hello.
Okay, so props to the production designers. Anything, Charlotte, anything come to mind that seems real?
I was thinking yesterday about how literally every moment of these films, particularly number three, you could take out and do in reality and it just wouldn't make sense. That you look at it or listen to it and be like, no, that's, are you human? Particularly, actually, in film number two, her coffee shop, when she goes to visit him,
this is the Princess Switch number two.
Yeah, sorry, Princess Switch number two. She goes after having her pre-stopover in London, in Chicago. Her cafe has something 15 Christmas trees lit up in it. Oh, and I was thinking, I've never been to somewhere with 15 Christmas trees lit up like that for a coffee.
I would like to go to there. Yeah. But it does feel like that would be taking up quite a lot of space that would otherwise be devoted to covers. So you would kind of lose a lot of money as a cafe. Yeah, I have questions about their business sense, if that's what they're doing. That's a very good point. I mean, my bigger issue with a lot of the decoration in these films, and actually not particularly these films, which I think do it quite well, but a lot of royal posh people Christmas movies, is they stint on the Christmas decorations. So I think these films do it quite well, but they're still visibly fake trees, visibly fake garlands, and sometimes a little bit pound shop baubles, a little bit. And again, these ones are not at the worst end of that. There is a terrible, terrible film on Netflix at the moment with Elizabeth Hurley and Kelsey Grammer and that whole crowd called, what is it, Father Christmas's Home. That has incredibly cheap looking Christmas decorations, like to the point where you're like, I'm sorry, you're living in a mansion and you've bought your Christmas tree decorations from Poundland? No, get out of town. I don't believe it.
Oh no, I did in the Princess Switch movies, the the castle is always fully wrapped in lights. But again, I feel like the production team didn't do that. I feel like that's just that house that time of year.
That's that castle.
And
they just lucked out.
That's why they chose it, because it's like, oh, let's go film in the Eastern European castle that really goes all out for Christmas every year. See, this is the thing. I'm very hesitant to give any credit for anything that looks nice in these movies, because I feel like that was probably already there.
But at least they had the sense to choose good locations in that case.
The location manager gets the credit. That's
the location
true.
Manager. Full props to the location
the
manager.
The only person who's really killing it in these movies.
Yeah, I mean, look, I love nitpicking, so I'm all here for let's nitpick. Like, what things stuck out to us. One of the things that really leapt out at me is I have never heard of a duchess called Fiona. I feel like that's not a common name for duchesses. And
outside
of course,
of
in Princess Switch 2 and 3.
I was going to say, is it a Shrek reference?
It honestly probably is. And I'm kind of terrified. Oh, no, I stand corrected. I've just Googled Duchess Fiona, and there is a Fiona Duchess of Carnarvon and a Duchess of Leinster. But nowhere like in England, which is where all these freaking accents are from. So I'm just saying. Yeah. Well, let's talk princes. Are the princes convincing? I wish you could see the face that Clarice just made. It was genius.
I would say yes, because they're very bland, and princes seem quite bland. They're all they're all Prince Charming and Cinderella, as opposed to like an Eric or a Flynn Rider, you know, or a Naveen. Very much in the, probably didn't even need to give them a name, to be honest, could just be called man.
So you're seeing like original series Disney rather than reborn Disney.
Oh, yes. No, because Richard Madden is great. I'm talking about the original animation Prince Charming, where he is just a slab of wood that like comes on screen going, hello, I love you. That's the vibe. That's the vibe that I get from every single prince in these movies. Interchangeable. I could not describe to you the physical features of any of these people.
I can tell you, they have all been cover stars of Lisa Simpson's favorite magazine, Non-Threatening Boys Club.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, all of them have been cover stars at one point or another. Very handsome, seem like nice boys, and definitely non-threatening.
There's got to be a reason for that, hasn't there? Because Clarice, you're saying like Flynn Rider. I would watch that prince and love that prince. There's got to be a reason they're so safe and non-threatening and bland. Is that so we can just enter that universe and that's kind of a safe space?
Maybe, yeah.
Or it might be. I think it's part of the romantic fantasy of it is, imagine just the man's rich. There's nothing else to it. You don't have to. Because with the Flynn Rider, you know, at the end of Tangled, like, they're definitely having some relationship issues after that. It's probably going to have a bit of a wandering eye. They're going to have to deal with that. This guy, none of these princes are cheating. None of these princes are like, have a secret gambling addiction. Like, they have no personality. So there's no reason for a fight.
They power down and that's it.
Yeah, they just power down at the other day and they just bring you, oh, darling, here's your tea. And then they go away and you don't have to. Because it doesn't seem like the princes and the princesses actually spend any time together in these movies the marriage has happened. It's really about acquiring the wealth and then the man goes away.
It also feels like they're slightly pliable. So basically the outspoken American girl with her American exceptionalism has to come in and kind of teach them to do their job properly in a lot of these cases, like genuinely.
Yeah.
You know, in the first Princess Switch, he's raising money for an orphanage he knows nothing about, has never been to, and has no idea how they use the money or if they need more. You know, in A Prince for Christmas, she basically sorts out a constitutional law crisis.
Yes.
Which I, as a former lawyer, would have loved to really get into in more depth. What the king is able to change the law by fiat, for the whole entire law of succession is just transformed in that film. Makes no sense to me. Ah, anyway, you know, it takes an American coming in and sorting everybody out.
Oh, that's revenge, isn't it? That's the American dream, is to get control of Britain.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, by the end of the Princess Switch movies, you know, there are Americans on the throne of at least three European nations. So, you know, you Republicans are doing, with a small R, are doing really, really well there.
Yeah. That's the game plan. That's the fantasy with all these movies. It's some sort of weird, like, grudge from the 18th century.
We will take it back. Yes. Yeah, it's a thing. I have questions. I have so many questions, but I have questions about the most recent Princess Switch movie, which we really should talk about a little bit more because it is the freshest of the bunch. They turn it into a heist movie. Why? And what did you think of that? Was this a bold new direction for the genre?
I mean, I like the idea of each one doing a different genre. Like next time they're going to space somehow.
All right, Fast Nine.
Yeah, exactly. I want the equivalent of that, yeah. And the thing is, in this film, they need to steal an artifact that's been lent from the Vatican and they need to con some nuns. And it's a choice.
It's Dan Brown meets The Sound of Music. You know, that's it's a classic right there.
Meets watching this in 2021, the... Fiona is just Cruella, and I don't know. I feel like Emma Stone needs to give her some credit or something because the performances are too alike. And she even has the two little minions who are like, all right, we're the Cockney minions.
We have bad table manners.
Yeah. It was a bit odd to watch it. And especially now that it's a heist, now that she's doing criminal stuff. I mean, the next one, she's just going to steal some puppies, for sure.
And then turn them into a cloak, Maggie Moo. I mean, what do we think of Vanessa Hudgens? Because I have to say, I do give her some credit because, you know, these films are objectively utterly ridiculous. But I could generally tell which of the three she was playing, even if she was dressed up as one of the other ones. In fairly short order. So I feel like, you know, performance-wise, that stands for something, even if the reason I could tell is because her performance is extremely broad. But, you know, it's not nothing.
I mean, it's not quite Orphan Black, but it is better than it could be.
I'm not saying it's Kind Hearts and Coronets either, yeah. But, you know, for a kind of film aimed at kids, are they? That's a good question. Are they?
I don't think any of my students watch them, but now I will be asking all of them tomorrow at lineup.
I think the movie's made for hungover people, food or alcohol related hangovers, right? Where so perhaps the brain is more of working at a child level because you're just like bright colors, sparkles,
yeah.
A heist, do the thing, the flippy thing through the laser. That doesn't brain.
that was very like, I mean, you know, did Catherine Zeta-Jones exist for nothing? You know, is this what it has come to?
I will say massive props to Vanessa Hudgens for the performance of the laser maze because she does it so sensually. She's like crawling across the floor. I mean, that's impressive. Yeah. Give her an acting award for that. Slithering along the floor like a little sexy snake.
Do you reckon that was on her CV? And they were like, yes, finally, it's her time to use that skill.
What can slither among you? Can ride horses, can speak Spanish, can slither. and I did, look, again, credit where it's due. I did like the fact that they were stealing from a tech billionaire. Because I think that's the single most timely element of any of these films.
Well, was it? He was an international hotelier, which is even more evil.
But anyway, yeah, you're right. But stealing from billionaires, I think, is something we should, as a society, encourage. So, you know, that at least they got right, even if they're propping up the system by lionizing royalty.
Yeah, and like... I won't say anything about the actual MacGuffin in this movie. The idea that St. Nicholas would have a you know what? I'll roll with it.
What? It makes perfect sense that St. Nicholas was, in this case, a real person. In fairness, I think he was a bishop in the, whatever, 4th century or something. But the Vatican has this kind of stuff just lying about, and they like loan it out to the nearest kingdoms for Christmas.
And it's like the that, most golden yeah. crusted. This is, I don't know if you guys saw Red Notice. This is Cleopatra's Eggs Part 2, where you just go, you shouldn't have to make it a thing. It could have just been, here's a really expensive golden crusted. Why did the Vatican have to be a part of it? It was very weird to me.
And well, that conversation with the, yeah. Oh God, what was he having the cake? And he was like, oh, as it's Christmas. It's a very odd moment.
Oh, yeah. The cardinal, or I think he's a cardinal.
Yeah.
That, it is weird. I mean, because again, you know, these films are obviously set in this weird parallel world where all these kingdoms exist and they all speak English, but they're worried about excommunication. That's the big threat here is excommunication. And I mean, that was a very big deal back in the, you know, 1200s, don't get me wrong. Like that really, it counted for something and it could really threaten your grip on the throne. In 2021, excommunication.
I want to see the version where she does get excommunicated and then she turns full Henry VIII. She sets up her own church. She's ransacking the Catholic churches. There's priests hiding in holes in the ground. She becomes a tyrant. Like, imagine the alternate universe Princess Switch.
Well, they are making a Princess Switch 4, right? So there's still time.
Oh, can but hope. With the space program as well, they set up with the money.
With the space program.
They no longer give to the church.
And I'm just thinking this is me spitballing. I'm just coming up with these ideas off the top of my head. Excommunication, excommunicado, John Wick crossover,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh my
or
God.
She just becomes an assassin. I don't mind. We can
workshop
the details.
We've seen a hotel already that serves candy cane martinis. Would a fancy hotel serve candy cane martinis? Please discuss.
What is a candy cane martini?
Look lethal and toxic.
I'm not a drinker. I'm not a drinker. Would that be nice? Like, would a martini, would those flavors go with sweetness?
I guess it would be peppermint, right? It would be like a peppermint liqueur.
Yeah.
With the vermouth?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Reddish, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's like melted candy cane in the, maybe they've made dishwasher vermouth. Is that a thing? I know you can make dishwasher vodka. Where you put sweets, you can put like Skittles in vodka and then put it in your dishwasher and then you have Skittles vodka. But like, again, I'm not a drinker, so I don't know. Can you dissolve candy cane in some kind of liqueur in the same way?
Probably. Maybe the point is that it's disgusting, but because Fiona is such like a live wire, she would have a disgusting taste in alcohol.
She's the female equivalent of those guys who drink Wicked. Is that basically it?
Yeah.
Okay, or WKD. Yeah. Okay. She does have good taste in shoes, though.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like, you know, they have actually spent money on couture or like at least designer clothes in this, which again, not all of these films do.
Yeah, I will say that some of the royal get-ups were halfway convincing, like the jewels and the crowns and the big chiffon gowns. Oh, I didn't mean that to rhyme, but...
It was very poetic. I loved it.
Oftentimes in these movies, the like royal accessories are so ridiculously bad that it just looks laughable. But here it's just convincing enough that I'm like, okay, this could be a very, very small country where they can have light tiaras.
Light tiara. Just, this is my daytime tiara. It's not, no big deal, you know. Yeah. Let me just, at this point, pause you guys for just a second. I want to cut to an interview that I did recently with one of these princes. Stephen Hagen starred in A Royal Christmas back in something like 2012 with Lacey Chabert and Jane Seymour as his mum. And he's recently been on screen in The Larkins. Of course, you may have seen him on TV, but he was good enough to jump on Squadcast with me and talk about his experiences being a prince at Christmas. So here's Stephen Hagen. Please enjoy. Okay, I'm joined today by Stephen Hagen, star of A Royal Christmas, which Okay, now there's a bit of a trend nowadays for these royal Christmas movies. I feel like you were at the kind of the beginning of that momentum, really.
Are you trying to say that I was at the cutting edge?
I think you're a trendsetter, that's all.
Yeah, I didn't know really anything about them whenever I took the job. I just took it as it was straight to DVD. The cast looked amazing, and it just looked like it'd be fun for a couple of weeks. So I went out not really knowing much about it. I learnt a lot on that job about shooting and timings and with film and all the rest of it. And then it's been mad because it's coming up to, it'll be 10 years next year when we shot it. And I've more people talk to me about that film than any other work I've ever done, which is brilliant because it's a nice movie. There's no weird hostage situations or dark humor. So it's a really nice thing to be able to talk to anybody about. And as I said, I didn't realize how much of a big deal it was. But then obviously now there's hundreds of them made every year.
Yeah.
And especially Hallmark. Like I know Lacey Chabert, who's in the film with me, she's contracted in and I think she does about two or three every year, which is brilliant. And she also loves them as well.
Yeah. I was going to say, because I've seen her in others, I think, since. Yeah, got a taste for it.
Which is deeply upsetting for me because I still haven't got a phone call. I must have really offended somebody. But no, as I say, it was brilliant and everyone's really nice and everyone knows what they're doing. And we shot it in Romania. But I think a lot of them are done out there and the crew are all brilliant. They know what they're doing. And yeah, it was good fun. But we shot it, I think it was July we shot it. So there wasn't.
Oh, wow. I was going to ask actually. Yeah. Was there any snow? Was there any of
that? No, we shot it July and then it was out by that Christmas and it was absolutely roasting. And then because to have you done up with the scarf and heavy coats and stuff. And I was just melting every single take. It was horrible. But then I did learn a little trick on that because Jane Seymour, who played my mum in it, is obviously an absolute legend. She, there was a scene where we're all outside and it was supposed to be freezing cold and there was loads of snow machines and she arrives and gets out of the car and she didn't have her coat on for rehearsals. I was kind of going, right, okay, we should better get that on, otherwise she'll make this all look. But she gets out with no coat. Her butler's holding her coat and she just does some cold acting and it's completely believable. She just does a bit of a burr and then that's it. I'm just looking at going, why didn't I think of that? But yeah, it was really hot, really hot. But it looks beautiful. Sun and snow.
It looks good.
Is perfect.
Yeah. And I have to say, it's quite difficult in some of these films convincing yourself that you're in Europe at all because it's very clearly Vancouver in a lot of these films. Very, very obviously Vancouver.
Indeed.
So, you know, at least there were actual sort of vaguely castle-y looking things here that, you know, looked the part.
Lots of the interiors were pretty amazing. And there was, Lacey's character was from Philadelphia, but there wasn't much stuff in Philadelphia, so it was quite easy. But then the studio we shot at, they have a whole American street. Lined up and ready to roll of all the different, it's like Universal Studios, I have just everything ready to go. I didn't have to stretch the imagination too much.
The main thing, I've been on a couple of set visits around Bucharest and Eastern Europe in general. The catering's always amazing. They always have the best food on some of those sets.
It was quite, I remember when we were filming outdoors, for most of the morning, all you could hear was, And I didn't have a clue what it was. And I thought no one was blinking. So you thought, well, there must be something going on. But then as I went to lunch, I noticed beside the canteen, there was loads of turkeys, just loads of turkeys just running around in the middle of Christmas. And I said, why have you got all the turkeys? And then it was the guy said, well, you're by the canteen. Can you not kind of put two and two together? And I was like, no way. And we're like, yeah, well, that's... And I was like, okay. It's hard to remember when you're shooting a Christmas movie that you're also eating turkey at the same time.
Wow. I mean, I guess that helps you get into character and very seriously, you know.
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah. But no, it was it was definitely a learning experience. But they've all wrapped up over there. They know exactly what they're doing and the studios are great as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you have to research the role as a prince if you're playing a prince of a fictitious country?
No, it was all very quick. It was I got cast a couple of weeks before we went and it was all, that's the good thing about it. They're not trying too hard to do anything. They've invented this structure and it works. Everybody loves it because I know from looking looking through and people talk to me about Hallmark movies is they have a formula and it works. And one of the most upsetting things I found was the vanilla one called, ours was called Royal Christmas. I think it's called A Christmas Princess. Somebody will know. Anyway, they've done...
Oh yeah, there is a Christmas Princess.
But yes, I think they've done... They've done a trilogy of it. So they've got her meeting the prince, they've got her getting married, and they've got like a royal baby or whatever it's called. And it was done by the same director who did my one. I was going, well, why not just do the sequel of our one? But as I say, they've obviously got a formula and it works, and people love it. People love just sitting down and watching them. They are very nice to snuggle down to.
Well, here's my theory. You get to the end of the year, it's been stressful, it's been busy, the weather's miserable, and you just want to switch your brain off for a couple of hours and watch something very safe and non-threatening.
Yes, we've all watched our fair share of ITV dark dramas where a child's just been murdered or taken hostage. So it's quite nice to just get everybody, especially when you've got young kids as well. It's very difficult nowadays to find something that, because we've got our stretch from 10 right up to 19, although she's not in the house. But it is that thing where you try and find something you can all sit down and watch, and it's just slowly becoming more and more difficult. So stuff like that is really nice. Although my youngest, he doesn't like watching Royal Christmas when it first came out because he couldn't understand. It was lots of, because he said, who's that woman you're talking to on screen? Meaning Lacey Chabert. And I was like, oh, that's just, and my wife just looked at me. I go, no, you can explain it, Stephen. And I was like, oh, that's just daddy's friend from work. And then there's obviously a scene where we kiss and he looks at me again and goes, I thought mommy was your best friend. I was like, yep. Well, we don't have to watch it again if it upsets you. She says, no, I don't like this one. I went, okay, no problem. So yeah, you slowly learn.
Harsh criticism.
They are my harshest critics. So that's why I live with them.
You're absolutely right about, you know, dark, depressing TV, because I know a lot of friends who after they became parents, basically can't watch anything anymore. Yeah. They're like, everything has kids in peril. Yeah. So you just, although isn't there a little orphan girl in this one?
Oh, yeah.
So,
that's,
you know,
right.
there is that story.
Yeah, but there's some of the stuff you're watching these days and you go, oh, right, the kid's dead. Or whenever you see like those introductory scenes and there's a slight pause or they look off camera, you're like, oh my God, something really awful has happened to them. Which is great. Like, they have their place in society, but as you say, at Christmas, it's nice just to sit down and watch something you can all enjoy together.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me about Jane Seymour, because I feel like it'd be quite confusing to have her playing your mum, just like in terms of your feelings about everything.
The person who doesn't find it confusing in the slightest is my mother, who just thinks it's the most normal casting ever. She's like, yeah, that makes complete sense. They obviously know who I am. My mum she's been playing that up for a long time, that she is Jane Seymour. But yeah, that was amazing. I didn't know what to expect, or once again, she's a massive legend. So you're turning up trying to figure out, are you allowed to look her in the eye? Is it what? But she was so nice, so welcoming. Her daughter was also in the film as well. So it was a really nice together atmosphere, because her daughter brought her husband out and her granddaughter was out at the time. So it was a real nice family feel to it. And she's what you'd expect from, especially because she was Katie's mom as well. There was beautiful moments where she's being deeply embarrassing, like any normal person. But she's also just great at what she does. She's a consummate professional and makes everybody feel comfortable on set, which is really nice.
And how was Lacey as well? I'm guessing similar, you know, professional. She's been doing this since she was knee-high.
Yeah, she could do it with her eyes closed. So it was quite nice to have her by my side through a lot of it. And I could ask her questions and she was very supportive, because it was my first one. I was kind of turning up. It's my first lead in a film as well, I suppose. Yeah. So yeah. I was kind of turning up and realizing, well, I'm in most pages. I better figure out what I'm doing here. But Lacey was great as well. And she was also very good. Obviously, being from Mean Girls, my daughter was very excited that I was working with her. And she managed to do a voicemail for Isabella using her catchphrase, fetch, which... Isabella was very
pleased. She's still trying to make fetch happen.
And who could blame her? And I think it has happened, though, to be honest. I think it's happened. It happens every time it comes on. But yeah, yeah, the whole thing was brilliant. I was very lucky to be involved. And it was kind of a happy surprise of figuring out how important these movies are to people, strangely.
Mm-hmm. What was it like celebrating Christmas in the middle of summer that way? Being surrounded by trees and everything. Did it make it a bit confusing come the next Christmas?
Yeah, because then it came around and we were releasing it and there was all the chat and you're kind of like, I feel like I've done all this before. And then I don't think it snowed that year, so I'd done all my snow in the middle of July. But yeah, it was, you don't necessarily get Christmas jet lag. It's here, having Christmas twice a year is not the end of the world. Not every year, but it's not the end of the world. And especially after these past couple of years, it feels like every season has happened five times this year.
Mm-hmm. Or zero. Exactly.
Or none at all.
Yeah. Not at all. So tell me about these films in general. Have you watched some of the others? Like, do you now watch them with a keen eye?
Yeah, I'd watched, when I got the gig, I'd watched a few of the previous ones. I'd watched one before that had, I think Roger Moore was in one. They'd obviously gone, right, if we can get someone out. And I think that's when they went, that's their kind of formative thing. They go, right, a James Bond one worked. Who can we get out of James Bond? Well, Jane Seymour was in James Bond. Why don't we have her this time and see what happens? So I watched that one. But no, I haven't. Any time I sit down and have to watch it, there's so many of them on. I sometimes watch, if Lacey's come on, I'll watch a bit of Lacey's to see who she's cleared off with now and try not to get too upset.
So tell us what you're up to at the moment, because you've been in the Larkins recently, haven't you? I think as we speak, it just finished about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, finished week 2 weeks ago. We filmed that during the summer, and that was the opposite. Well, was it? Yeah, we were trying to make everything seem quite warm and sunny, and it was cold and rainy. So it's, it must be on my CV somewhere that I can do the opposite of the weather.
You should have gone to Romania.
Yeah, exactly. But then then there's a Christmas special coming up. I think they're talking about it being aired on Christmas Day, and then there's chat about a second series. So yeah, that was loads of fun. That was kind of the first job that I'd got after the pandemic, and it was all outdoors, and it was nice to speak to people who I didn't live with for a change. And I think the people I live with were quite glad to get rid of me.
Quite glad. Thank God, some a break at last.
Thank God he's gone. Yeah. So yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, fingers crossed for a second season, but and more Christmas specials of that, because it feels like the kind of thing that, you know, that should be.
Yeah, it's very similar. It's that thing where it's family, warming and all the rest of it. But I did, when I watched it, I didn't realize how many scenes that started off with the mother and father of the family, mom, pop, where they were either putting their clothes on or taking their clothes off after. So obviously they've been having a good time together, and I was like, wow, you've really, for a Sunday night watching audience, you're really pushing the envelope here. So yeah, I thought that was a lot of filth in the Larkins, which I wasn't expecting. But yeah, apparently it's family friendly.
The headline.
Yeah.
family friendly filth.
Family
there we go.
Friendly filth. Yeah, that's what we're
that, it feels like that could be the slogan for a whole new Hallmark channel, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd get the phone call for that one.
Well, listen, thanks so much for chatting to us about this. And, you know, presumably this is going to play on Christmas somewhere in the world for eternity.
It's not just Christmas. The amount of texts and messages I get, there's all year round this thing's on. And then there's a countdown to Christmas, and then there's in the middle of July, it comes out in America. I don't understand it at all, but in the middle of July. And then for a while on Netflix, it was just on there the whole time. So yeah, it's that thing where you know exactly what you're going to get, and that's it. You just try
and that's what
exactly. Yeah. But and people have watched it so many times as well. Mm. So yeah, it's obviously an amazing thing that I didn't see coming, and it's really nice to have been a part of it.
Any favorite scenes or scenes you remember as being difficult or scary?
Yeah, I was thinking about it the past couple of days. So there was a dance scene in it where we had to do a choreographed proper, like, Strictly Come Dancing thing, which that was kind of the first week of rehearsal was spent mostly just dancing. And that wasn't with Lacey, that was with Katie, who played kind of the love rival. So we spent tons of time on that. And that was really scary. And then the other one was, there's a bit with one of the, you don't call them security guards in the royal family. You know, the guys that stand outside.
Oh, bodyguards.
No, the guys that stand outside.
Oh,
with big
right.
Hats.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
oh God,
like the yeoman warders, yeah, yeah, or the
so we had one of those, and the director basically said, right, there's a bit where you have to have in the script, it just says have fun, and I'm like, well, what do you want us to do? He says, well, just mess around. So we ended up, Lisa and I just tried to make this guy laugh nonstop, and they kept rolling and rolling and rolling, and we just tried everything, and we did keep Matt. And then it got to a point where we had to stop shooting because he kept laughing too much. But I remember that scene. So it was heavily choreographed, was one scene, and just another scene we completely improvised. But it was a lot of fun.
Well, listen, thank you so much for chatting to us, and see you in a Royal Christmas, yeah, like
whenever you want.
Whenever
you want.
Whenever.
It's like the back call. You just put out the Hallmark call. It'll be there somewhere.
I'm Helen O'Hara, film journalist, author, and host of Women vs. Hollywood, a new podcast from the Stripped Media family. We're exploring the fall and rise of women in Hollywood, from the silent era to the present day and into the future. Each episode, I'm joined by three or more special guests to discuss the challenges that women face in the film industry and look at what we can do to change the picture. We've got actors, directors, producers, writers, academics, film experts, you name it, they're all here to explain what's going on in Hollywood. Search for Women vs. Hollywood now, wherever you're listening to this, and come join us.
So that was Stephen, who himself is obviously not bland, so you can see what a good acting job he did, right? You know, yes. It kind of works. But also, I love that, you know, they had in that film, it was obviously Jane Seymour as the Queen. In the Prince, Christmas Prince movies, they have Alice Krieg as the Queen. There is a real tradition of getting a wildly overqualified British actress in that role, at least. And I think it's one of the things that, for me, the Princess Switch lacked a little bit. She's very nice and everything, but she's not quite on the same level, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting in this one that they hold off the reveal of Fiona's mother for so long. Mm. And I kept being like, yeah, oh my God, who is it?
Who's it
going to
be?
Helena Bonham Carter? And then it's Amanda Donahoe, who is fantastic. But it's really weird how much they play out. Like, by the end, I thought it's going to be Cher, right?
Oh my God, Nando! This is like, Mamma Mia, here we go again.
Yeah, I just found that decision quite odd, instead of just having her there so we could have more of her performance, because she was actually very good as the mum.
Yeah, so where do they go from here? What do they do for the Princess Switch 4, apart from going into space?
We need another Vanessa Hudgens. That was the most disappointing thing about this, is that I thought they were going to keep adding one for each sequel.
Maybe they'll doppelgang one of the men.
Oh my God. Yes.
Or all of them. I don't know. Look, I'm just, again, Netflix, call us. We're coming up with gold ideas, but there are going to be some bad ones among them.
The fascinating thing is the lack of chemistry between the majority of the couple. So I was just thinking about like cloning the princes. I was like, oh, but then they have to have no chemistry with more women.
But they could introduce an interesting man, and that could be the twist.
Whoa.
Imagine.
Oh, that was good. Yes.
Imagine if men were interesting. Oh my God.
These are fantasy movies, so.
Let's not ask for the moon, shall we? I'm trying to figure out there is a shared universe here, right? So I wasn't entirely kidding about the next Netflix Prince universe, movie universe. So Christmas Prince is on TV, but I don't know if it's the character or the film, but I think it's the film is on TV in The Princess Switch. Two characters from The Princess Switch movies visit the hotel in a castle for Christmas, which is slightly mind-blowing. Aldovia, which is the country from A Christmas Prince, is mentioned in A Night Before Christmas, which confusingly also stars Vanessa Hudgens, but in a completely different role. So there's another crossover we can do. There's another crossover. The Holiday Calendar is on TV in A Christmas Prince, and Christmas Inheritance is on TV in The Princess Switch, but in The Christmas Inheritance, they watch The Holiday Calendar. It's very confusing. I mean, you thought the Marvel Cinematic Universe was complicated. This is a whole other level of interconnected meta-universe stuff.
is the implication that all of these events happened, but they were also immediately were turned into films?
Okay, maybe. Maybe. But the king and queen from A Christmas Prince actually appear in The Princess Switched Again. So some of the people are definitely real. So maybe they were playing themselves. Maybe all of these films are documentaries.
They hire the royal family to play themselves in the films.
Yeah, something like that, I guess.
My orphanage is right now. Let me film myself.
Look, I mean, honestly, this could take us months to really untangle, but there's endless crossover potential. Maybe the reason they haven't announced A Christmas Prince 4 is because they're planning a massive crossover event, the most ambitious crossover event.
The NTU crossover event.
Yes. In movie history, where Vanessa Hudgens has to play at least 4 characters, one of whom is married to a medieval knight.
So time travel instead of space.
He'd understand the excommunication.
Absolutely. It's I can only assume that's where they're going. And we have Duchess Fiona now. The only country a Duchess Fiona really makes sense in is either Ireland or Scotland, which is where A Castle for Christmas takes place. So we can bring those two in as well. This is going to knock Infinity War and Endgame into a cocked hat, I'll tell you.
And also, wasn't the nunnery in Scotland, because that it was in seemed familiar.
Oh, well, I mean, that is probably because they shoot in Edinburgh and around Edinburgh for the Princess Switch movies, or some of the time. The rest are shot in pretty much solidly Romania.
Okay. I think the nunnery might be in Scotland, because also the nun was Scottish. They said it was an hour away. So wherever they are is an hour away from Scotland.
But would she do a community service in Scotland?
I don't know.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Maybe they invaded Scotland. I don't know. So many things going to happen.
Okay, maybe post-Brexit, the UK broke into a tiny patchwork of tiny independent nation states, all of which have their own royal family, all of whom sound like Prince Charles. And that's why some of them sound Scottish and some of them sound more English.
And America's just infiltrated each one, marriage by marriage.
And is gradually re-annexing the whole of the UK. Yeah.
Oh, and that's where you get the Infinity War crossover event, is all the Americans like band together into one mega American.
Power Ranger style.
Yeah, the independent British states have to defeat to prevent the
giant Vanessa Hudgens, like 50 foot tall.
Okay, so this is a great, my God, this is brilliant. Because so then they make an infinity gauntlet out of all the tiaras and the, you know, Christmas stars and stuff that we've had so far, right? They click their fingers and then all of the British accented halves of the couples disappear. Oh. And only the Americans are left to take over the Netflix Prince universe, right?
Oh my God. And then every movie is about a hardworking city girl who goes to a small town to find some inspiration for some article she's working for. And
we all work as journalists. Have any of you been sent to a small town for an article you're working on and met up with some handsome hunk while you were there?
The single article that's taking me 2 weeks to write and have an unlimited budget for, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay, great. So that's, I haven't been yet, so, you know, fingers crossed for that. I'm sure it'll be any day now. I'm sure it's just an oversight on Empire's part. Let me just begin to wrap it up here, because we've been talking for quite some time. Would you recommend these to the unsuspecting?
Wait, what does unsuspecting mean? Like, you break into the house.
Per innocent people who have never heard of these films, okay. Would you say, here's a film for you?
I'd have to do some prior checks. Like, are you a convert to the Christmas movie idea? Do you like Hallmark movies? Do you like Christmas? There's a lot of questions I'll have to ask beforehand, before recommending.
I would say yes to the Princess Switch movies, because I think having Vanessa Hudgens in them makes a world of difference. Because it's like, we know her. She's from High School Musical. She's in Tick, Tick, Boom. And I think she provides like her performance is weirdly accessible because it's like she's performing at a real movie standard. And if you don't have anything, you have that at least.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Okay, so just to calibrate people's expectations, this is a question that I usually ask at the start of the podcast, and I forgot because I wasn't planned today because it's very early in the morning. Listeners, I apologise. Your favourite Christmas movies, what do you go to this time of year, if anything?
My favourite ones are the one that I grew up watching that I always go back to is The Bishop's Wife with Cary Grant. It's like, yeah. You better be nice to your wife, otherwise hot angel Cary Grant's gonna come and seduce her away, which is a beautiful Christmas lesson.
A life lesson, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I also love Elf. Elf's a just solid.
it's pretty flawless, yeah. There is no wrong answer there. How about you, Charlotte?
Mine isn't so much a film, it's the 1980s Christmas special, the Claymation holiday special. I don't know if you've ever seen it. I think it's on YouTube.
No.
And it's, I've watched it practically every Christmas since, I say birth, I'm just guessing the first couple of years there. And they do these renditions of Christmas carols and they're so bizarre. Like there's ice skating walruses. They're hosted, amazing. Dinosaurs host it like it's a television show, but they're Claymation dinosaurs. It's half an hour long and that's my level.
Oh my God. I think I have a new Christmas tradition. That sounds amazing. Yes, I'm going to look that up. Fantastic. Yes, please. Second question that I ask everybody is, do you have any unusual Christmas traditions in your family? Is there something that you absolutely have to do every year? It doesn't have to be unique or anything, but it's something that maybe is not everyone does.
We do new pyjamas on Christmas Eve. And when I turned 21, my mum had decided I was too old for it. And I didn't find out till the Christmas Eve. I was like, let me put on my pyjamas, mother. And she went, well, I've not brought you any this year. And I can't tell you what a tantrum I had that she has never forgotten since. And I get my message in November going, what pyjamas would you like this year?
Yeah. My mum tried to stop doing stockings on the basis that we were too old. And we were like, look, we don't care about having a lot of stuff in them, but there have to be gold coins and there have to be baby oranges. Like, this is not negotiable. And this is not age, you know, limited. So just sort it out here, please.
Yeah, I guess the one thing I still do is I have the same stocking from since I was, I think, an actual baby. And it's a little Rudolph, like... The upper half of his body. And I realize now describing it, that sounds like a horrific thing.
Yeah.
But he's holding up the little stock and sock. He's holding up the little sock and he looks kind of disgusting now because he's 30 years old. But I love him still.
Yeah, my uncle made himself extremely unpopular with my parents by going to America once and bringing back these enormous Christmas stockings for me and my sister because we were the only ones born at that point. But they're about... near enough a foot across and about like 3 feet tall. And my parents were just like, how the bloody hell do you expect us to fill these every year for these bloody children? And literally they had to resort to blowing up balloons a few times just to fill the stocking with balloons because they're just too big for anything else. So, but yes, I do still have it. So there you go.
That's amazing.
Anyway, so good Christmases, good plans both. I'm impressed by that. Even if you have dismembered Rudolph for yours, Clarice, because, you know, each to their own, I guess.
Also, my old dog used to really chew on it. So it's got like, oh, bless.
Oh, well, but it's still part of Christmas, even if it's slightly chewed. Yeah.
The catchphrase no one knew we needed.
Yeah, I'll just workshop that and send it around to my agencies. I'm sure that'll make us all rich as well. So, well, this has been a very productive session. I think we have sorted out the problem of a princess switch for a Christmas prince for, and God knows what else. And hey, let's bring it back. Let's do a royal Christmas too. You know, there's so much material here to work with that we can make into something extremely stupid. I mean, profitable. I mean, great. So that will be great. But listen, thank you so much to Charlotte and Clarice. And where can people find more of your work before you go? Charlotte, do you want to lead off?
Sure. So on Twitter at Sometimes Movies, I write for Film Stories. I'm on the podcast Jumpcast and all sorts. So yeah, Twitter is probably the easiest place to find me.
Awesome. And Clarice?
Yeah, also on Twitter at Clarice Liu.
Right. And you are also in The Independent.
Yes. Yeah, but I post everything on Twitter, so.
It's fine. You don't need to go there. Awesome. Well, listen, thank you guys so much and happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode of Bah Humbug. Please join us next time for more Christmas movies madness. In the meantime, I've been your host, Helen O'Hara. This podcast is edited by Ben Williams and produced by Kobe Omanaka for Stripped Media. And if you've enjoyed the pod, please do rate us with 5 shiny Christmas stars wherever you listen to your podcasts. But whatever you do, happy holidays!
Just heard a Stripped Media production.